First reading from the Acts of the Apostles, chapter 10. In Caesarea there was a man named Cornelius, a centurion of the Italian cohort, as it was called. He was a devout man who feared God with all his household. He gave alms generously to the people and prayed constantly to God. One afternoon about 3 o'clock, he had a vision in which he clearly saw an angel of God coming in and saying to him, "Cornelius." He stared at him in terror and said, "What is it, Lord?" He answered, "Your prayers and alms have ascended as a memorial before God. Now send men to Joppa for a certain Simon, who is called Peter. He is lodging with Simon, a tanner, whose house is by the seaside." The next day, the men went to find Peter and arrived in Joppa at the house where Peter was staying. And we pick up Acts at verse 23. So Peter invited them in and gave them lodging. The next day he got up and went with them, and some of the believers from Joppa accompanied him. The following day they came to Caesarea. Cornelius was expecting them and called together his relatives and close friends. On his arrival, Cornelius met him. It is reported that what followed were several days of collective prayers and meaningful discussions involving all of those gathered before the two groups went their separate ways. I know that there are those of you this morning that are thinking that the choice of readings was somewhat unusual for a Unitarian Universalist congregation on a Sunday morning. So what's your point, Jamie? What I hope to do over the next few minutes is to use this story from the Acts of the Apostles to illustrate an example of two individuals, together with families and followers, prepared to bridge a significant societal gulf between them, therefore demonstrating an openness to radical hospitality and love, and in so doing, being willing to risk a lot. The setting for the story shifts from the city of Joppa in Judea, where the Apostle Peter then resided, to the city of Caesarea in Samaria, the home of Cornelius, a Roman centurion of the Italian garrison then stationed there. Cornelius has a vision, and resulting from that vision, he seeks out the Apostle Peter to have discussions with him. As a result, Cornelius's men find Peter and invite he and his followers to visit and remain guests of Cornelius. Peter accepts this invitation and hosts Cornelius and his staff prior to traveling together with some of his, that is Peter's, followers to the residence of Cornelius. The meeting apparently lasts for some time and involves prayers and significant friendly interactions between the two groups. The gathering that follows over the next few days sounds a bit like several Western regional fall gatherings and CUC annual meetings that I've attended from time to time. I digress. So what was the significance of this event, and what made this seemingly ordinary display of hospitality between these two men and their families and followers so radical? In fact, what they were doing in this story was rather irregular given the social norms of the day, and likely would have been seen by their respective authorities as being subversive, and may well have subjected either or both to significant penalties. These men and their families and followers were from very different faith and social groups and were forbidden, either by law or strict social convention, to enter each other's houses or to have any such significant relations with each other. To put it in modern terms, each was the other. Sounds a bit like the parable of the Good Samaritan from Luke 10:25, a tale that I think we are all familiar with. To this I would say, yes, but the story of Peter and Cornelius goes a significant distance further in bridging gaps between socially distant persons. In the parable of the Good Samaritan, the concept of who is a neighbor is defined widely, and it is made clear that the responsibility for others is also defined widely. In that story, the Samaritan finds an Israelite man in the road in obvious distress and does what is immediately necessary, including seeing to payment of the innkeeper, to ensure that this victim's immediate needs are looked after. The story of Peter and Cornelius goes a significant bit further, I submit, in that neither Peter or Cornelius were motivated by either apparent need or crisis when they extended and accepted the invitations of each other's hospitality. And have no doubt, as I have alluded to earlier, in the Palestine of biblical times, each of these men and their respective followers would have been regarded by each as the other. Given the different tone of these two stories and the fact that they were written by the same author also gives me confidence that the meaning of the two reported incidents is very different. The society of Palestine in biblical times is not unique in terms of groups of people being separated by dictated norms. Some lines have been and are more strictly and starkly drawn, and some less so. Some lines have been enforced by the force of law, and some have been and are enforced by other forms of social contract and convention. Japanese biblical scholar Hiso Kayama draws comparisons between the story of Peter and Cornelius in the book of Acts and the relationships between traditional Shinto adherents and the Burkoman people. Kayama points out that traditionally the Burkoman people were considered to be unclean, and that the employment that was available to that group included the dirtiest and least desirable jobs in society. Contact between this group and the mainstream of society was discouraged and stigmatized in the strongest terms. Another and possibly extreme example of a group of persons being ostracized by portions of society would be the Dalit caste, popularly known as untouchable, of India, Pakistan, and Nepal. In recent Western societies, and in some places to date, the divide between Catholic and Protestant Christians has and does result in restricted social interaction between members of these two groups. Many more examples could be used. So you ask, what does this have to do with us today, as Canadian Unitarian Universalists, in this city, in this fellowship? I am asking you to approach this query through three lenses of Canadian Unitarian Universalism, namely, first, the sources of knowledge, and particularly source number four, which is Jewish and Christian teachings, which call us to respond to God's love by loving our neighbors as ourselves. Secondly, to principle number one, which calls us to affirm and support the inherent worth and dignity of every person. And thirdly, the five aspirations of the Canadian Unitarian Council, namely that we aspire to be deeply connected, radically inclusive, actively engaged, theologically alive, and spiritually grounded. And in that regard, particularly to the issue of being radically inclusive. In Canadian contemporary society, we do not explicitly prohibit contact between any group of people by law. No, we're much more subtle in how we identify and often exclude others. In Canadian society, effective exclusion may be based upon any number of factors, including, but not exclusive of the following: race, ethnicity, faith group membership or association, political party membership or affiliation, socioeconomic status, educational level, or criminality or perceived threat, or in fact any combination of these. That is not to say that we Canadian Unitarian Universalists, and that we in this fellowship do not care, or in fact act on those caring impulses. We stop to help people involved in auto accidents. We donate our time and money to Camp Hope. We write checks to worthwhile charities. We write letters to politicians and newspaper editors and engage in much hand-wringing over the state of our community, our society, the world, and its most vulnerable. Measured by the standard of the Good Samaritan, I think that we generally do reasonably well. I pose the question, however, how radically inclusive are we as Canadians, as Canadian Unitarian Universalists, and as Unitarian Universalists in this fellowship? How open are we, for instance, to dialogue with the faith group in the church, synagogue, temple, or mosque down the street? The one in which I hear they say, or do, or believe, fill in the blank. Well, no, I haven't actually been there, or actually heard it said, but I think I know what they say. How open are we really to the Black, Indigenous, and people of color? And are they here in representative numbers? How open are we to a diversity of theological thought? How open are we to a spectrum of political opinions and the holders of same? Maybe too right-wing, too left-wing, too centrist. After all, did you see the sign on her lawn last fall? How open are we to persons who have had trouble with the law? In short, how do we fare when measured against the standards of Peter and Cornelius, whose actions, number one, responded to God's love by loving their neighbors as themselves? Check. Secondly, affirmed and promoted the inherent worth and dignity of every person. Check. And thirdly, was radically inclusive and created a hospitable, diverse community for those few days at least. Check. Please do not misunderstand me. It is not my intention to in any way point fingers or prejudge. I, however, leave us with the following two questions. Firstly, how do we, as individuals, as a community, and I mean as this fellowship, as a broader faith community, and as a wider Canadian society, measure up to the standards set by Peter and Cornelius? Secondly, how can we do better? In response, I'm asking that we be both deliberate and candid in our periodic assessments of ourselves and our communities in answering these two questions, and be prepared to take necessary steps towards change based upon such assessments. So may it be, now and always. Blessed be.